Welcome to the BitByte Podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not financial advice.
You all set for Valentine's Day?
No. Dang it, man.
Because Bitcoin.
At least that's not here yet.
Bitcoin got us some presents.
That's right.
Last time we spoke, do you remember what the price was last time we talked?
It was breaking above 40, but okay. Barely. It had just done that first jump, you know.
That's right.
41, I think.
Yeah, because I think we recorded on Friday, and I think we just broke up above 41. And then as of the 8th, which was just yesterday at the time of this recording, we hit a high of 45,497.19. And then we're hitting resistance basically at that point. Currently we're at 43,891. We're in a rising wedge, it looks like. Or a broadening wedge. I don't know how you'd call it. But it's rising. So, I mean, I think that's a kind of a bullish scenario. Depending on how that's going to play out, we should see. I mean, I think we're seeing a reversal, but nothing's concrete yet. Because I think we had talked at the time, even when we hit 41, that we talked about it going down to 30. Is that right?
Well, we just said, I don't think we said it would go that far, but we just said we weren't sure.
Yeah,
I think I said something in the mid-30s, realistically.
Yeah, I think we were talking about like if there was a rejection. But I think we were even thinking, I was thinking a rejection at 42. Then that would send us back down to like the mid-30s. But that's not what happened. We continue to kind of slice through. Obviously, a day of resistance isn't a bad thing. It took us a long time to get down to the level that we were at, so it'll take us a while to climb back out. However, I think things are looking pretty good on that front.
Yeah, I can't complain. I mean, it's slowly going up. I mean, slower than maybe you would want.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. But, I mean, I want to see, like, I saw a post the other day. Somebody was asking, you know, at what level will you say that we're kind of venturing back into that bull run again or we're going to get our next pump? And I honestly don't think we've got to cross 48,000. I think we got to hold 48,000. This is my opinion, right? Not financial advice. We've got to cross that 48,000 threshold and hold that for a while in order for me to feel like, okay, we're going to continue moving upwards again. Otherwise, this is kind of just a fake out. But the weird thing is, over the past 2 months, basically 3 months since November, you know, ever since we hit that high of 69,000, nice. It's been this weird, it's just been a drop. We haven't gotten any like bounces at all that whole time.
No, it's been pretty brutal. I mean, if you would have bought in at the peak, you know, you'd be not looking so hot right now.
And just as a reminder, too, anybody that does buy Bitcoin, just know 9 out of 10 times when you buy, it's going to drop because you're buying at the wrong time.
Yes. We're just going to assume Murphy's Law, you bought at the worst time.
Yeah, you're going to buy it. You're going to buy into the FOMO when you're buying. Which is when it's going up, you know, after a parabolic run and you got buddies talking about it and they're like, man, I just made 30 kajillion dollars off my Bitcoin investment. And then you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to buy two. It's going to drop.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially if your friends are making money and they're telling all their friends about it. That's definitely when stuff is about to hit. That's when the short happens.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think we had also talked at the time we were talking about, you know, stuff, sanctions possibly on Russia and, you know, what are they going to do? Because Putin had talked about how they would have resources in mining or they'd have an advantage if they decided to start mining. And coming out today, Russian government and the central bank have reached an agreement on cryptocurrencies, according to the Russian Kommersant. Basically, both organizations will treat Bitcoin and cryptocurrency as assets. you can, so basically what they're saying is that it's legal to hold it. It's legal to use it. It's legal to buy it. You have to go through your KYC approved on ramps. So whether that's going to be banks or exchanges, you do have to go through those methods. Otherwise it is illegal. But that's not anything shocking. I think, you know, part of regulation is that that stuff has to happen.
Yep.
They're saying that transactions above 600,000 rubles, which is $8,000, must be declared, you know, to your, I don't know what their transaction or what their taxation office is. I don't know if that's the Commerçant or what, but I think that's a pretty positive thing.
I agree. It's going to take adoption and, you know, sometimes regulation for the base of Bitcoin to grow. So I think that's just one further step in that chain where the foundation is laid and, you know, it could eventually become the system that we, you know, finance runs on for the whole world.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to the game theory part of it, right?
Right.
If, you know, the early adopters and the early incentivizers really are the ones that are going to push that greater adoption further. So, I mean, America, are we going to sit on the sidelines of the United States? I don't know. We did see a lot where, you know, Arizona was pushing to make it legal tender. I don't know if we talked about that, if that had developed by the time we had recorded last week or not.
I don't think we did talk about that.
But that, I mean, that's what's happening. Is it's happening so fast. I want to say Texas has got something on the you know, in their government there where they're trying to push it through their legislature, where they're going to make it legal tender in Texas. Arizona's got it now that they're going to be putting forth a bill to make it legal tender in Arizona. And I want to say there's a couple other states in the United States that are doing the same thing. So we're seeing, I mean, we're just seeing a lot of those dominoes start to fall, and we still haven't heard what's going to happen with those Latin American countries, what's going to happen with the El Salvador volcano bonds, basically, is what they're becoming known as. So there's a lot that's happening with that game theory part of it. Another thing that came out today was BlackRock is talking about, and for those of you that don't know who BlackRock is, they are like the ultimate investment house. No, $10 trillion in assets currently under management.
Well, weren't they the ones that were buying up real estate everywhere right after the pandemic happened? They were just gobbling it up faster than people could. Yeah.
I mean, they are like, there's a lot of things that they do that I don't agree with, obviously. But they're like they're the big dog on the block when it comes to institutions. Whenever, because I really want to say, like, when Elon Musk came out with the FUD about the renewable energy for mining Bitcoin, mm-hmm. I think it was kind of a direct kind of response from the CEO of BlackRock saying, hey, it's not clean. You better watch your stuff with it. And I think he just recently put out a memo saying that if your energies are not clean, you know, if you're not carbon neutral or whatever the case may be, without getting carbon credits, or if you don't have a plan in place to get carbon neutral, then they don't want to invest with you.
Yeah. Well, BlackRock, well, what you're talking about there is the ESG. I think it's environmental, social, governance.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they're wanting companies to, it's almost like the social credit system for corporations.
Right.
And they're setting it up to where you need to have environmentally friendly and social justice is part of your investment portfolio, how you buy energy and things like that, which I am not a fan of. I'm not a fan of the social credit system at all. And I think this is a form of control that some very powerful interests are trying to exert onto the rest of society. So,
yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, as much as they want to talk about how, you know, like the carbon credits and all these things, they're so beneficial for the planet. And really, I mean, your big corporations are the ones that are paying for it. No, who's going to pay for it? The people that it's really going to impact are your lower poverty levels already. They're not going to be able to afford a lot of the stuff. The rich, I mean, if they're already wealthy, they're not going to care about a few extra dollars here or there. But when you're already barely making it, and then they're going to raise something like that where it's basically energy-based type things, that just cripples your lower class and your middle class. because there's not much middle class left as it is.
Yeah, no, that's part of the problem. And, you know, with some of the countries like France before the pandemic, they were putting in carbon stuff on the taxes on gas. And they basically, like, I don't remember if it was quadrupled or even more the price of gas. And there was a lot of protests going on in France, you know, before the pandemic happened.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, there were. I mean, that's pretty rough. I mean, if your gas prices, you know, jumped up four times what they were, I mean, they've doubled basically in the past year. And it's been not great. So I couldn't imagine even worse.
Well, and I mean, already we're kind of looking down the barrel of oil getting to $120 a barrel here pretty soon, probably. Yeah. If it hasn't happened already, I don't think it has yet, but we're getting pretty close. So, I mean, that's going to hit us all at the gas pump for sure.
Yep.
There's been a lot. And then, I mean, when you look at that Freedom Convoy that's been running through Canada, did you see something? I mean, I'm sure you saw some of that stuff, right?
Yes, sir.
The GoFundMe fiasco with that?
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to see a looking glass of what it looks like if there's a central bank digital currency, there you go.
Exactly. You know, and that's the other thing. In the past, when WikiLeaks first came out, and they were getting funds from PayPal and all this other stuff. I mean, PayPal withdrew them. Amazon was even part of that. They withdrew the ability to get funding, and it's kind of that. I mean, that system is pretty much set up now, but it's not totally enforced. But once you get that in place, then good luck. If you're trying to be a dissenting voice against the establishment, you're basically toast. They're going to cut your funding off.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's kind of sickening, really. And then Bitcoin, on the other hand, they went on ahead and they started a Bitcoin basically fundraiser for them. And I think currently they're at it's valued at $500,000 of Bitcoin. Or $500,000 US dollars worth of Bitcoin currently is what they've gotten funded on through Bitcoin for them for that Freedom Convoy.
Yeah. And they, what was it, like $9 million that they had raised with GoFundMe?
Yeah. Yep.
And they were talking about just stealing the money and probably giving it to other, you know, ESG appropriate charities versus the Freedom Convoy.
Yeah, I think the public backlash on that whole thing has stopped that, but...
It has, but yeah. That's what they were talking about first.
Yep.
So...
Yeah, because they were trying to say that people got injured or were killed during some of those protests, so they did that was against their standards for their company, whatever it was. Anyways, it was crooked, as crooked can be, in my opinion.
I agree.
And then back in 2016, there was the exchange Bitfinex, right? Back in 2016, there wasn't the plethora of exchanges out there as what we have today. Your biggest, you know, your biggest beasts. I mean, Mt. Gox had kind of just gotten taken down not too long before that. Bitfinex was kind of probably your largest and most robust exchange at the time. You know, you did have Coinbase at the time because I was buying through Coinbase at the time, but they got hacked for 119,000 Bitcoin, and it may have been more like 124,000, kind of what I recall. But the DOJ just did seize, I can't remember if it was yesterday or today, 94,000 Bitcoin from that, and I'm going to say his name wrong, Ilya Lichtenstein and his wife, Heather Morgan. He was 34 and she's 31.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. There were like some hipsters out of New York that that got that money, huh?
Yeah. Well, and I'm still kind of confused on the whole thing because from what I saw, they were getting them for laundering the money. That's what I saw the arrest report said. So if they are laundering the money, that doesn't mean that they hacked it themselves. And there's a lot of controversy going on with this whole thing right now. Like, the timing of it's weird. But, I mean, I think, I don't know if we've ever said this on the podcast before or not, but you do not want to use Bitcoin for illicit activities, really. I mean, because it is trackable. It may be pseudo-anonymous, but they can track those addresses and where that coins are moving to. Because yes, it is an open, distributed ledger, right? I mean, there's no hiding anything. It's out in the open for everybody to see.
Yeah, no, that's the whole, I mean, that's kind of what the Silk Road was about. I mean, at the time, nobody was tracking it, but the ledger is open for people to read.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you can see how coins move when they move from one wallet to the next and vice versa. I mean, it may take a while to research it and figure out what that actually was. It's got to be worth their while, I'm sure, but you can see it. That's why this was kind of odd. They're still not sure how this is going to get funded back to the people that were actually robbed during this whole fiasco. But it was a old hack, and I'm sure there's some very happy people that were impacted by that hack when it took place. And I mean, considering, and I wonder how Bitfinex is going to treat it, right? When I think about it just from a business standpoint, at the time it was 120 million. Maybe it wasn't even that much. Maybe it was 19 million or something like that was what the hack cost at the time. But can you imagine that kind of as an investment? You sold off basically 19 million. You're going to get back 3.1 billion at this point.
Yeah.
Now, from what I understand and what I recall, they compensated the people that got hacked with a separate token. So I don't know if they're going to try and claim that, oh, well, we've already compensated you, we don't owe you this. That would be kind of shady, but I don't know.
Especially if it hasn't appreciated quite like Bitcoin has.
No, and that was the thing. Like, I mean, you basically would probably have wanted to have sold off whatever that was, because I'm sure it was trading at a discount compared to Bitcoin even at the time. Because 2016, yes, Bitcoin was probably sub 500.
What would be funny is if those coins were like your redeemable. So if you'd sold it off, and now you're sitting on nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I wonder how it plays out. So,
yeah, I'm very curious how that's going to end up happening. Like, I mean, it's going to become like kind of the Mt. Gox thing, because there's been a big shadow about the Mt. Gox hack, and they've recovered some of that money, and it's going to go back to the initial investors as long as they were able to provide the paperwork and show the chain of custody that it was theirs. But a lot of people are freaking out. They're like, oh, they're going to dump it on the market and it's going to just tank it. Now I'm sure a lot of people are going to be saying the same thing about this. But who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Bitfinex gets it all back or if it goes back to their investors or their, not their investors, but their customers that they were custodying the Bitcoin for. Time will tell.
No, that's just an interesting point, because, I mean, if the feds, I mean, I don't think the federal government is generally a big fan of Bitcoin. So, I mean, what if they do decide to just dump it all on the market?
Well, and that's the other question then. Is the federal government, are they going to keep it, or are they going to return it back to Bitfinex? If they do keep it, and then, because they've done that before, they've seized Bitcoin in the past. I think the Silk Road Bitcoin, they sold off at auction.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were able to get it cheap.
Yep. And then they also, well, didn't they recover? Well, they helped another company. What was that? Colonial Pipeline collect some of that
ransom. Yep. Yeah, they never got. They got the people that paid for whoever it was to hack it. Right? Is that what it was? Because they weren't able to get the people that actually did the job. They were able to get like the contractor or the person that paid for whoever did the job. They were able to get them, but not the actual hackers themselves, from what I recall. Because I think I was in Vegas whenever that happened. I think you and I were talking on the phone about that.
Yeah. No, it was just really fascinating how they were able to track that down. So, I don't know, getting your ransom paid in Bitcoin, probably not a great idea anymore either.
No,
with that open ledger.
If you really want to do crime and you want it to be untraceable, you do it with cash.
Exactly.
You don't do it with Bitcoin. You don't do it with something on a decentralized ledger that everybody can see what, you know, you can see the money moving from one place to the next. You don't do that way. Like, I don't know. But maybe that's just a current fallacy that's still out there amongst the public. Because I think if you talk to the general public and you ask them about Bitcoin, I'm sure a bunch of them still think, oh, it's used for illicit activities. And when I don't think really you want to use Bitcoin for illicit activities at all.
No. Well, if you ask the general population about anything in history, they're going to be,
yeah,
you know, pretty well lost. I know I saw a guy who was like getting petitions signed in California claiming that Joe Rogan just was hunting Triceratops, and he was getting people to sign it.
Man, that is so, I love it. Love it. Love it. I think that the gal too with that Bitfinex hack, I think she's got like a rap video on YouTube where she's razzle dazzle, and she was writing articles for Forbes about cybersecurity.
Well, I guess she would know, huh?
You can't make this stuff up, man. So ridiculous. So crazy. The other part of the news that I wanted to talk to you about too, and I wanted to get your viewpoint, CPI is going to come out tomorrow for the month of January. What do you think it's going to be? I mean, we had the jobs report, I think last time we talked, that came out a little bit more positive than what I think anybody was expecting. Yep. CPI is supposed to come out tomorrow, and they're saying if it's anything over 7.2, that it's going to be more than what they're expecting. Do you think we've kind of leveled, or do you think it'll come out higher?
Me personally, I think things are still getting higher. I mean, if it doesn't show that things are getting higher, then I think they're cooking their books, and then I'm not even going to trust the unemployment numbers, to be honest.
Well, so, and then my question would be, what does that do for the Fed rate? Because if the reason why they want to raise interest rates, right, is because they're saying inflation is starting to climb and they got to stop it. If CPI numbers come out and it's lower than what they expected, according to the CPI, does that allow them to be dovish and continue to print and continue to do what they're doing? Or do you think they'll still continue to, like, on the hawkish stance that they're taking right now?
Well, when it comes to, you know, the people that are in charge of this stuff, they're so clueless that trying to come up with a rational point of view on what they're going to do, even with whatever data, let's just say we knew the interest rate was going to be like 8 or 9%, you know, so it's higher than expected, I still wouldn't trust them to try and raise interest rates to slow it down.
Yeah.
Well, so I don't know. I think they're going to have to leave it no matter what, because raising interest rates is the best way to basically derail everything.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why I'm kind of really curious, because if you want to have the public sentiment to believe that inflation is starting to drop, regardless of what we're seeing at the, you know, whether it's at the grocery store or with our whole goods, anything like that, they need to have the narrative. And if they have the narrative that says, okay, well, we have more jobs, interest rates the inflation rate's not as high as what we were expecting, we can continue on the road that we're on, you know, and that way they have public sentiment to back it up, regardless whether it's true.
Yes. I think if I had to pick which direction things are going to go, they're going to try and keep the train just moving. And if they have to cook the books to show that things are going okay, then that's what they'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very curious to see how that's going to play out. And that report comes out tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to see.
I don't know. I guess we'll be talking probably on Friday, and we'll talk about what happened to the Bitcoin price afterwards.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see, because I don't know, Bitcoin, and I haven't seen what the NASDAQ's been doing, but I've been hearing a lot that it's actually been very separating from what is happening within the stock market, but I don't know how true that is. I don't know. I had TradingView up and I closed it out. I don't know if the tech stocks are on the rise, because that's really what Bitcoin's been mirroring for a long time there. So I don't know where that is actually happening at right now. I'd have to look into that a little bit more, but I'm curious for sure. One of the things that I also wanted to make sure and do, and I don't know if you want to do this too or not, I kind of want to start talking about, for people that are listening to us and maybe they don't have Bitcoin yet, how do they do it? What do you do? Like, what are the steps? Where are some of the trusted places to go? Because there's a lot of shady things out there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and the less than reputable places, like what was it, Bitfinance, or when they got hacked, I mean, that's the last thing you want is your money to be, or your coins to be stolen from you. So that's very important.
And that's, I think, another common misconception, right? It's not Bitcoin itself that got hacked. It's always the exchanges. It's these intermediaries that are handling it for you if you're not doing it yourself.
Yep.
The Bitcoin and core, then, the chain, the blockchain that Bitcoin exists on has never been hacked.
Exactly. And so that kind of behooves you if you purchase it at some place. If you're wanting to actually trade it, then you might leave it on the exchange that you're on, though it is less secure than if you put it on a wallet and had cold storage of some type.
Yeah, I mean, because if it's on an exchange, they can freeze your account. They can do all kinds of stuff. Whereas if you actually have it on cold storage, you don't need those exchanges to interact within the Bitcoin blockchain, within those nodes and on the network itself. That is a separate entity and a protocol separate from all of those on-ramps. So,
yep, and that's the pure way of handling Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But you got to start somewhere. You can't just walk up to somebody and say, "Hey, can I buy some Bitcoin from you?"
So. Yeah, you could try that. You may get stabbed, you know, or you know, what is it? Because there is a website. It's almost like a Craigslist. I can't think of the name of it right now, where you can just kind of do meetups and personally buy Bitcoin from people. I don't recommend that, but you can do it. You got to remember, man, but this was back when, I mean, originally it started when people were, you know, buying Bitcoin for maybe $100. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot, but now you're not going to roll up to somebody and be like, "Hey, I got like $50,000 with me. You want to sell me some Bitcoin?
Want to sell me a coin?
Want to sell me a whole coin right now?" Yeah. Don't recommend that. But cool, yeah. There's some cool things happening. And I want to look into these. I don't know if you saw. I saw some reports on it today. There's going to be a couple different things that are coming out. They're going to be actually allowing you to publish your podcast. I mean, you publish your podcast anyways, but you can actually claim it within the Lightning Network, and people can just tip you directly within the Lightning Network to your podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome. I'm like, oh, man, and we're going to have to look at setting some stuff up.
Yeah, well, speaking of podcasts, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the kerfuffle with Joe Rogan. Like, they are coming after him right now.
Yeah, they are.
And if they're able to silence him, he's the number one podcast, bar none. They say he gets 11 million listens or views per episode.
They won't be able to silence him. If Spotify pulls him, I mean, because the beautiful thing about podcasting is you can go anywhere. You can do it yourself. You don't need anybody to do it.
No, I agree.
He's got the money. He could set up his own server and just be like, "All right, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do anything with any other business out there. I'm just going to do this on my own."
Yeah. Well, then BlackRock's going to come in and say, "Hey, man, you don't have your proper ESG score. We're going to shut you down."
I don't. I mean, that's the beautiful thing, like I said, about the internet. Hey, I don't know if you saw that, too, where there's this. I'm trying to think what the name of the it's a right wing, and they consider it right wing. I don't know if it actually is or not, but they offered him $100 million if he leaves Spotify to come to them.
Oh, I think it was Rumble.
Yes, I think that's it. I'm like, yeah. I mean, dude, they can't silence him. They're mad because he's more popular than their news.
Yeah, well, he's way more honest, so that's kind of how that happened.
Well, that's the thing. All he's doing is talking to people.
Exactly. To both sides, which is verboten.
Yeah, for some reason. And yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I don't listen to every Joe Rogan episode. There's episodes that I don't care to listen to because I don't care about some of the guests he has on. However, there are some that I really enjoy listening to the conversations to. And I mean, he is the first one to say he's an idiot. He doesn't know.
He's a pretty smart idiot.
He is a pretty smart idiot. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, he wouldn't, I don't think he'd be near as interesting within the conversations if he didn't do all the homework that he's got to do for his podcast.
I agree. Well, and that's just something to think about with some of the new changes, like with the next version of the internet. They're trying to put podcasts on the blockchain just to make it to where it's not something that can just be taken off completely. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And speaking of that, Adam Curry, he was a VJ back in the 80s on MTV. He's kind of at the forefront of that. So it's kind of fascinating that how it came full circle.
At the forefront of what side of it? Of the
the next version of the internet and the blockchain.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I can't remember what his podcast is called. He's like called the Podfather, really, because he's like one of the first people to ever do that.
And there's a lot of, how do I put this? There's a lot of infighting right now, especially with Web3, because so many of it is coming from the venture capitalists and it is being very corporate controlled. Whereas the true decentralized version of the internet, I mean, because when you look at Facebook's Meta, right, that is part of the Web3 from the corporate standpoint. So the question again, it's just like the US digital dollar. Are we going to go with the centralized version or are we going to do the hard road and get the decentralized one that's honestly open to everybody?
That is the question, right? Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know. Let's see if ESG wins this one.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they, well, we'll see with Joe. I don't think they can stop him. I think he's got too big of a fan base.
Well, if they're able to stop him somehow, then I don't know. It was pretty shocking to me last year when they were able to kick Trump off of social media and basically limit his presence everywhere. So
no, for sure. I agree. But I think the difference being is that Trump does not have the wherewithal and the know-how to go and create his own thing. I mean, he's tried. I think he's trying to do something. Whereas Joe Rogan, all he needs is a server and an internet connection, and he can broadcast again. And I guarantee people will find him.
Yeah. And he can just contact Elon to get some help if he needs
some. I've heard some rumors about something like that, right? Like just him and Elon Musk, if they just team together, they could make a huge social media network. And they'd just be like, if you want to speak, do it.
They say like 30-something satellites for Starlink were wiped out from a solar storm recently.
That's crazy. We're digressing here, but that's for sure. Anyways, this is probably one of our longest episodes we've done, but check us out at, you can email us at contact@thebitbytepodcast.com. We have a website, thebitbytepodcast.com, obviously. We're on Twitter, @thebitbytepod. And I think that's all I've got. Do you got anything else to add?
I think we've been long-winded enough.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. Peace out.
Laters.